looking down at then at the other end of the table, we saw Fukuoka go down, we saw Yamagata go down. I guess we kind of expected that. We saw Corfu struggle and eventually go down. Urawa, we are Reds. But what does that mean if you finish just outside the relegation zone?
They're embarrassed.
And Sean, you've probably seen a lot more of them than either of us do have. What have you made of their plight this season?
It's hard to say, but it's to a certain extent, you know, like they are the epitome of everything that can go wrong in the J-League. They get like the right players eventually, but you know, like some of them are in a bad mood or some of them are out of shape, and it seems like, when's the last time that, for example, we've seen Urawa under a manager that actually seemed in control of the team? I mean, I'm not detracting from Finke, he's a nice guy, and I think he did something good there. But, you know, like, in this last 3 years, you never had the feeling that Urawa were, like, the powerhouse that they are, you know, depicting themselves as. You know, so, I think that, you know, the main problem, okay, I'm Italian, so, you know, like, in Italy, where things go wrong, you change, you know, you fire the coach,
yeah.
You know, and you get another one. I think that's the main problem. My big mantra this year is that they do need an Italian coach. They do need... Oh, it doesn't have to be Italian.
Happen to have the right budget.
It needs to be a no-nonsense coach. Somebody who can win games 1-0, who can just, you know, like, go and you know, take care of young players who are just, you know, eventually not being professional enough.
Well, they didn't have an Italian coach. They're not going to have an Italian coach next season. They've gone from one Petrovic to another. What did the first Petrovic do wrong, Shug?
This podcast is not... How long is it? I think the main problem with him... There were two, I think. Personally, I really liked him.
Hmm.
He was great value. And whether they won or lost... Oh, sorry, whether they lost or drew. He would just always speak to the media and he would always give you honest answers. He would never come out and just ignore you or give you the line. He would really speak and be honest. But I think the two main problems were, A, he's too direct. In Japan, you have to do things a certain way, and you don't just tell someone you think this, you go around the houses, and then you eventually tell them that maybe this could be something. And he doesn't do that, he just comes out and tells you. And I think maybe that in that way he rubbed up a few people the wrong way. And I think also he himself didn't really know what his best team was.
Mm-hmm.
And who he was putting out, and you'd turn up for games and you'd think this guy should, and suddenly he would have changed it. And now he's on the bench and now he's not playing this week, or he's playing him in a different position, and for that way I think it's disconcerting for the players. If you don't know, like we said with Reysel, their success was bred upon the fact that everyone knew who was playing where and what they were doing.
Yeah, that's true. Even when they change members, it seems like
the same player. Yeah.
Is this something that's to do with just the first team at Urawa, or is it something that's inherent to the entire club? Do you not get the sense that they lack a long-term strategy? They possibly got carried away.
Coach to be long-term. Gamba had Nishino at the top for 10 years. So even in the youth teams, his effect drops down to the youth team coaches. He can speak to them and tell them, I want this kind of fullback. I want the fullback to be playing this way, like Barcelona do, and like Man United now are trying to do. And you have a style that comes up. So if someone does get injured, the guy who comes in knows what he's supposed to be doing. It's not a case of needing 5-10 games to learn.
Well,
with Urawa, the coach changes every year, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So then his ideas come in, and then the youth team coaches are being told, no, we do it this way now. They should have just stuck with someone like, I don't know, if they kept Engels or they kept Finke and said, okay, you've got 3 years. I don't care if we finish 14th or we finish third. You've got 3 years, and in 3 years, if we don't win the league, then you're out.
Well, now they've gone, 6th to 10th to 15th in three seasons, having been Asian champions in 2007. So it's a consistent downward spiral now.
Well, you know, like, one thing is just, like, to keep it very simple, okay, it's about their, you know, lack of planning. It's just, like, who is supposed to score the goals for them this season?
They have no strikers for most
of the season. I mean, in the last game, they had no strikers on the field.
And that's another point that Nagoya won. Because, of course, Kashiwa, the eventual champions, went to Urawa on the final day. It was a tricky match on paper that they had to win, and they won comfortably in the end.
Easily, yeah.
And Pixie was not happy that they hadn't picked a single striker to play the final game.
You don't have any strikers. Well, actually, Despotovic, I feel a bit sorry for Despotovic. I'm going to have to, like... Because, okay, he didn't...
Stand up for a
shot. He didn't score in the league. I would actually stand up. No, I'm not going to stand. I'm bothered. But he didn't score in the league. But he did okay in the Nabisco Cup and seemed to be getting his confidence there. He arrived mid-season, having not trained, I think, for I think it was about 6 weeks. And the transfer was very hurried because the Ed Milson, who also was useless, by the way, I thought he was their worst player. He was quickly rushed out because the offer came in and they had to take the money because it was good money. So Despotic was quickly bought. He wasn't in form. He has to adapt to a new country, a new style of play. And he struggled. And in the Nabisco Cup, he was finding his form. And then in the final, he didn't come on. They needed a goal. And they bought on, I think, the young guy in the midfield, Kojima. They bought on, I think, a fullback. They bought on Tsuboi. And it was, I think that really knocked his confidence. And he was doing a job. Like, he would hold the ball up and he would give something that Escudero can't. I mean, there's very little that Escudero can do on a football pitch.
Except for rolling.
Except for rolling and running a straight line and then shout at the referee. But I think I felt a bit sorry for him because he was the one actual forward. They've got Hara Kazuki, who's not really a striker. They have Takasaki. They don't really have a striker.
Well, they don't. I saw an interview with Petrovic, very honestly, about a month after he left the club, because he left with five games left in the season or something. And he said one of his biggest regrets was that even if Ed Milson may not have been playing so well, he should have stood up for what he believed in and thought, well, if we sell him, we don't have any strikers. And he didn't say this because he respected the board too much. And then they were left with nothing, whether Milson was any good or not.
You're pouring salt on the wounds. I mean, that's one of the main problems, not only at Reds. It's just like in a lot of clubs in Japan, you know, like the board is still rather incompetent. I mean, not maybe they're good businessmen, maybe they know how to sell the products, but, you know, like football is not a very simple matter. It's something that is learned, you know, generation after generation. It's something that's learned, you know, on the pitch or at least next to the pitch. A lot of these people who are in the boards in Japanese clubs, they never played football themselves. They don't watch games. They just, you know, like they treat the football club still as a division of a big company.
Sure.
It could be Mitsubishi, it could be Kyocera, it could be Panasonic or whatever. So that
with board members who get shifted sideways from the big company.
Right. For example, you know, just to give you an example, like a couple of years ago when my Japanese hometown club, Kyoto, was losing game after game after game, they brought in this new president, and he opened on the official website, he opened like his own blog, and, you know, he would say, I like to go to this ramen shop, I bought a new BMW, I went on vacation to Tokushima. And that was his approach. He was selling, you know, while the team was, you know, like, going down to J2. He was talking about his hobbies. So that's a sensitivity. Can you imagine something like that in England or in Italy? I mean, the guy would be mobbed. But
I think, yeah, Malcolm Glazer should open a blog on the United website.
I think if we get onto the topic of Malcolm Glazer, we could go on a tangent that lasts a long time. But, I mean, I suppose these are elements in which the J-League is maybe not yet totally mature, but then at the same time it gives us this wonderful competition where while you can get the second division champions winning J1, you can get the biggest club in the country nearly getting relegated.
Right, and also this, the beauty that when you bring in somebody who's, you know, truly competent, such as Nelsinho, he can pick a team in J2, okay, well, he just right before, you know, they were relegated, and he can just in 2 years build like a winning team, a team that can play Santos almost at their level. So there is a beauty in it, of course.
Well, and he proves the impact that a manager can make. Okay, I think that's going to be all we'll talk about on this for the time. We'll have a musical interlude, then we'll get back with our other highs and lows of the season and a bit about the Japan national team. Part three, final part. Are you awake?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Good stuff. Sean, you were about to tell us all about Figueras Ascendo before I so rudely interrupted you. Please pick up.
Yeah, I think they have to get a mention. Not just because of the situation they were put in and everyone felt kind of sorry for them and they became like the team to look at. But they finished fourth in the end and they played some good football. Okay,
might even get into the Champions League depending on what happens in the Emperor's Cup.
They might, and they had some good players. I think they were really unlucky not to get any players in the team of the year. I think the goalkeeper, certainly, I actually had a really strong shout to get in ahead of Narazaki. Mm-hmm. Yang Yonggi is one of the best midfielders in the division. The defence, I think they had nearly half of their games in the league, they kept a clean sheet. But they didn't do it in a Yokohama Marinos kind of... I never felt bored watching Sendai. It always seemed that they were trying to attack and they had the base.
No, they were an attractive side to watch.
There's an interesting... fact about Sendai that they were just like, you know, doing extremely well in the beginning, and then they had this this problem when Sekiguchi got really upset because he was sidelined for one game, a home game against Kofu that they, you know, win very easily.
Yeah.
And after that, they started losing game after game after game.
I think they went on a 9-game run without a win or something.
Right.
I might be making that up because I haven't looked this up.
It seems like every single team in Japan goes on these runs.
Yeah, but it's the catalyst.
They went on a 17-year unbeaten run, and then they went on a decade.
Right. Which
the
I think is
better
no,
than
going. Wait. It is interesting because it shows how, in a way, just like what the Japanese call the mentaru, which is just like, you know, like the, you know, their attitude, you know, like the mental attitude, is very important. You know, there's this concept of wa, which is translated roughly as, you know, peace, harmony.
Yeah.
And you know, if you break the wa, you know, like which Sekiguchi clearly did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something, you know, it might be a coincidence, but you know, like maybe not.
No.
Maybe not. And you know, Sekiguchi is, you know, is a, I know the boy, interviewed him. He's a very nice guy. But it's interesting that he was supposed to be the superstar of this team. He was in the national team.
Sure.
Yeah,
only
playing in the national team.
Yeah.
And he ended the season with no goals and no assists, I think.
Their supporters are always entertaining too. I think weren't you going to sing a little bit for us, Cesar, about the big out of the
fans? Maybe we can, you know, like we can chant something together at the end of the, at the very end of the podcast.
Okay, then we'll move on.
Yeah.
Other highs and lows?
Other highs and lows.
Corfu, Mike Havanagh, he was a big hit with the Japanese press.
194
centimetres, his full name, and his height had to be mentioned at every reference. He, of course, is the, Japanese
new
national striker of Dutch parentage, but
The new Kishoyano. I think.
Hopefully not.
I like him, and I think he's a good player. He's better than just being a tall guy who can head the ball into the goal, but I really don't think he's good enough to make a mark in Europe. I think he's good enough to be a top mark striker in the J-League, but I think he's going to struggle because defenders in Europe won't be as put off by his height as Japanese defenders.
That's true. When I spoke with him, he told me that, you know, the toughest game for him were against Nagoya and against Marinos. Because actually those two teams are the only two teams in Japan who have some decent centre-backs.
Sure.
So, but in Europe, every team has decent centre-backs.
Yeah.
Or, you know, quite good.
You can't play against Gamba Osaka every week
right.
when you're in Europe.
Right. I think that the key for him, it would be to land in the right team now. And I really hope he doesn't, you know, go straight into, you know, like the Bundesliga.
Oh, the right team in Europe or in Japan?
Yeah, in Europe.
I mean, let's not forget that people have been talking about him for a few years, but he's really done nothing until he moved to Corfu, right? He had a good spell in J2. He's come up with him, and he scored a good number of goals for a team that ultimately got relegated. He could have even saved them in the end. They were pretty close to Urawa, but I mean, that's still bottom of J1 to go from that straight to Europe, as some people are
well,
most of it
is not happening. As you know. At the moment, the boy is on vacation in Miami and is waiting to hear. I really hope that he just could get a, you know, like a good deal. Maybe in Holland would be great. Belgium, Switzerland, something like that. Like it's sort of
a
step up league for him.
I don't think it is. Is the Belgian league a step up from J1?
Right, but
possibly in that it puts
maybe
you in the shopping Kofu window to then
right.
go.
It didn't
to
work
Germany.
For Kashima. He's now
no,
stuck.
It worked
in,
for Honda.
Yes, yeah.
It didn't work for Honda. He's stuck in Russia. Every single transfer window saying, "I'm going to go to Juve. I'm going to go to Liverpool," and then he's still stuck in Russia.
I think it means he definitely made the grade there. He became like a much better player by going to Europe. That's my point. He's stuck in Russia. That was, of course, we can talk about that. It was a very uncautious move to get stuck on such a long contract on a rich club that do not need to sell him.
No.
And you know, he's asking now 25 million for him.
Yeah.
But
huh?
That's what he asked.
25 million
euro. It was actually, you know, what I heard.
25 million euros for Honda.
For what I heard, you know.
But they don't need to sell. I think that's the point.
But who's going to...
Nobody.
No one's going to buy it. That,
right.
that's the
only hope was Paris Saint-Germain or maybe Manchester City, but it would have been a commercial stunt.
Yeah.
I mean, Juventus was really interested, but they could buy Vidal for 11 million. And even though I think Honda is slightly better, I mean, it's twice the price. So
it is a bit of a shame for him. I mean, this is a good way of getting into the national team. 18 months ago, he was the star. He had a terrific World Cup. He had supposed suitors across the entire of Europe. And now, as you say, he's stagnating at CSKA Moscow. Whereas now we have people like Kagawa coming into the team.
Right.
Japan, champions of your continent. I mean, it feels like a long time ago.
Yeah,
but
it was actually
2011. It was actually this year that Japan won the Asian Cup in Qatar, pretty impressively as well. No,
I think it was fantastic. You know, like I think it was really the team made the grade over there. You know, they overcame a lot of, you know, difficulties. They won a lot of games that, you know, like the only a few years ago they would have lost.
Because they have an Italian coach.
There you go. I think Zaccheroni has been a fantastic job.
Yeah.
He's the right guy in the right place. He's very open-minded. He really appreciates the Japanese players for what they are. He's not asking them to do things they cannot do. He talks to them a lot, one by one. He's very meticulous. He's very fair with them. And, he has this enthusiasm that maybe he doesn't show much in, you know, like on TV, but he has, you know, when he speaks with Italian media, he's totally, totally in love with the job, what he's doing, with the country, with the players. And I once talked with him only a little bit. It's very hard to get access to him. But he was talking about Hasebe, and he was really talking like he was talking about his son. You know, like this.
But he does seem so devoted, doesn't he? He'd only been in the job for 2 months before the Asian Cup started, but he clearly cared about and knew about his players. I mean, one example that springs to mind is in the final, when it was 0-0 with Australia, right, until extra time. And he moved Nagatomo from his usual left-back position to the left side of the three attacking midfield players. And it was not something that we'd seen with the national team before, I don't think. But then it was Nagatomo's cross, Tadanari Lee. What a goal it was, too. It wasn't all about Nagatomo, what a goal it was.
To take it first time was...
I thought it was stupid.
I saw him doing it, I was like, no, what...
Back to Zaccheroni. He just not only about the players. He spent a lot of time learning about the country.
Mm.
He read history books. He read, you know, books about Japanese society. He talked to as many people as he could. He spoke with Leonardo, who has been in Japan. He spoke with everybody he could and tried to learn as much as possible about the country. Another thing that's very nice is just like when the earthquake struck. You know, like he was in Tokyo and there's all these things with the radiation and everything. And you know, a lot of foreigners chickened out, and he actually did go home for a week.
He went home the next day.
Then to be fair, there was no J League going on. He went home to watch the Japanese players play in Serie A and in the Bundesliga.
Well, he was back straight away, and he definitely, you know, like he's really, you know, participated to, you know, whatever football could do, you know, like for the country, which is actually maybe another thing that might be worth mentioning at the end. That fantastic game in Osaka in March when Japan national team played a selection of the
Japanese. Well, let's mention it now. Yeah,
I think it was a great moment in the history of Japanese football because it really brought people together. I mean, the atmosphere at the stadium.
It was beautiful. It was like a patchwork quilt of people in club jerseys from around the country all coming together and singing together. I mean, particularly the Sendai fans, of course. But
what was also good was it took the lead. It showed why football should become the number one sport here over baseball, because baseball was still talking about keeping the season and we're not going to take a break and we need to keep. And the J League did really well. They almost instantly said the games are off. We're not going to come back. We don't know yet. We're going to wait and see. We're going to see how the situation develops. Mm. And then having done that, they then arranged this game and they brought everyone together and they raised, I don't know how much money in the end. They raised a lot of money and they had these initiatives to help out. And I think it showed that the football is like, has this flexibility and it's kind of like a new way of doing things.
Flexibility as well. Down in the third tier, in the JFL, Sony Sendai, they were obviously affected by the disaster. They couldn't play for several months, so they ended up playing a half season. They played 17 games, only once against everybody else, and they were exempt from relegation. And everybody else played 33, I think. And you know, that was, you know, adapting to fit the circumstances. You know.
And it was amazing how the world of football in Japan, which sometimes is very hard to grasp, everything was made a lot of sense when it came to just like the solidarity or this ideas. You know, it seems like everybody was able to do the right thing at the right moment. Everybody was right there for it. I mean, it really, the Japanese football has a big heart. You know, you can't deny that. So it was an unfortunate circumstance overall, but it was great. You know, like to see what actually, you know, like the sport can do here in Japan.
Yeah. And another team in the area, Kobatore Onagawa,
yes.
I think has his first game coming up. I'm sure I read somewhere they have a game or they have tryouts for next season.
They're trying out because they're registered to play in the Tohoku League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and they're back. I think this season they couldn't play, and there were a couple of people who started up a kind of, how he's not like quite a charity, but to help raise money for them.
Yeah, Mike Innes in the United Kingdom. Who?
And they're going to be back, which is good.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And again, that was football kind of brought people together and gave everyone this kind of this motivation to get involved. It gave it like a focus, where I think sometimes with relief efforts it's hard to know how to help, where to help. It gives like the focus.
It was of course in difficult circumstances a real highlight of the football season. Moving to a different kind of togetherness, just to finish up with, and moving back to the Japanese national team, their year of course finished up in Pyongyang, which a match that didn't really mean anything because North Korea were already out of World Cup qualifying.
No, they weren't. I mean, actually they were, but the people in the stadium weren't aware of that.
Oh, okay.
And also, they're now world champions.
They are unofficial world champions. For those
I'm sure that the people who are in the stadium thinks officially they were world champions. Not making fun of them, but you know.
No.
Like,
well, you don't know. For those who don't know, Japan's last game of the calendar year was away to North Korea in World Cup qualification. Japan already through to the next round. North Korea already out. But I mean, watching the scene, it showed that the Cold War is alive and well. No, fantastic.
It was
history lesson. Yeah. Just watching it on TV,
it was like a step back in time, I thought.
Yeah.
It was like watching kind of archive footage of football in the 60s. Everyone in kind of similar clothing, very prim and proper. And even after the goal, they were clearly happy, but it was like kind of polite applause. It wasn't. It was a surreal experience.
Yeah.
And it ended another unbeaten run in Japanese football.
Yeah,
Zach was unbeaten until that point.
Yeah, and as you said, it made North Korea unofficial world champions, because that was a title that Japan, of course, got last year when they beat Argentina. Mm-hmm. They'd held it for how many games in the end? 17?
Well,
17 under Zach, and maybe a little bit more before that.
We better don't tell the North Koreans, otherwise they might refuse to play any game in the future to hold.
Well, that's what I was thinking. The next
game is Tajikistan, so Tajikistan could be the next world champion.
Well, yeah, but it could be a brilliant irony. They don't have the internet there, so they're not aware of this internet phenomenon that is the unofficial football world championship. And so
we need to tell them somehow. Well, we need to get a carrier pigeon.
Anybody who listens to the podcast who knows how we could possibly get through to the Dear Leader. If you listen to this in North Korea, you're world champion. So it'd just be a brilliant story if you just stopped playing football and so you could keep the title forever. Guys, I think we're going to have to wrap up for today on that note. It's thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, it was fun.
Yeah,
it was
lots of fun. Yeah, let's.
Well, we'll see what the listener response is, and maybe we can do this every few months or something.
Let's not just rely on response from North Korea, though.
You don't have to be listening in North Korea. It could be in Japan, in South Korea, in England, wherever. It's coming up to Christmas. Sean, what are your plans for the holiday season? Are you in Japan? Are you in the UK?
Plans, I go back to the UK next week, and I come back to Japan the start of January. I just missed the high school tournament, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be back in January. So yeah, I'm looking forward to 2 weeks of probably relaxing in England. And actually, I'm hoping, if he's still there, to go and see Abbott playing for Leicester. But he might well be back in Japan by then.
Cesare, you like high school?
Yeah, actually, you know, the
last year, and 2 years before,
I spent the early days of January, you know, watching games around the Tokyo area. This year, I'm going to catch a couple of games, and then I'm flying to England as well, in other places. After the Emperor's Cup final, of course.
To complete the trio here, I too am flying to England.
We're all going to meet up.
I will miss the Emperor's Cup, but I'll no doubt catch enough of that to give some kind of roundup for the minute cast. Guys, thanks very much once again. And to all our listeners, Merry Christmas, and I'll be back with you soon.
Ciao.
Well, just a quick postscript to note that this podcast was recorded last Friday, the 16th of December. So before the FIFA Club World Cup final, and also before the death of the North Korean leader Kim Jong-il. That just about wraps it up for the Minutecast for 2011. Thanks again to Cesare and Sean for joining me, and to all of you for listening. Please do get in touch via the Minutecast website or Twitter to let us know what you think of the specially extended podcast, and indeed whether we should do it again.
Links to mine, Sean's and Cesare's Twitters can be found on our website too. That's minutecast.footballjapan.jp. Right, that is it. A very Merry Christmas to you all. I'll be back on New Year's Day with a report on the Emperor's Cup final. Bye for now.